I have today with me Bob Rose, who's the president of the North County Farmers Market Association in San Luis Obispo County. Jeff Wade, who's the founder and director of Slow Money San Luis Obispo, or actually Slow Money SLO, I believe is how they actually call themselves. And Eric Mickelson, who is president of the board of directors of the Slow Natural Foods Co-op. He's also an organic farmer at Pozo Organic Farms. And this is going to be something that I think we're going to find interesting because all of us know about farmers markets. All of us know about ways in which you can buy things locally. And we all hear a lot about the farm-to-table program, both for consumers and for restaurants. And we probably don't know nearly enough about it to really be effective consumers and participants in the community. It's been going on for years. Before there was food bank, and before there were food stamps, and we had gleanings and things like that going on. Slow food co-op's been around for a long time, but we're getting a better understanding about how farmers markets, the slow food co-op, and other organizations like that fit in. Gentlemen, welcome. I appreciate you being with me today, and we'll hopefully have an interesting conversation and probably give an education for all of us. I guess let's start with, because I guess it's a real key thing. Jeff, can you explain to me what a food hub is and also what slow money means? Because you're not a bank, and we're not talking. We didn't have you here as a banker. But I'd like to get some idea what it is, because I suspect for both myself and for those listening, those are areas that people may have heard about, but they have no idea what they actually mean. Jump on in.
Okay. Thank you, Fred. How much time do we have?
we have an hour to start talking.
So slow money, just quickly, is a nationwide movement. It is done by local groups. It is a nonprofit, and the intention is to help small food and farm businesses to survive and grow, and which ultimately benefits the soil because of their practices and their food security. We locally have been doing this for 4 years. As we hear from Eric, going forward, Slow Natural Foods Co-op was the very first food-related business we helped, and in many cases that help goes beyond just support networking. We do some peer-to-peer lending. We can talk more about that later. As far as food hubs, they can take a number of different forms, and it usually depends on the needs of the local community or region. And they can be a physical facility that provides chill or storage or even processing. They can provide joint marketing for the local food businesses. And the idea is that smaller farms or farms that need to benefit from joint efforts can utilize a food hub, whether it be for-profit, non-profit, cooperative, as a resource to help them get their product to their buyers.
Okay. Well, let's back up to the slow money part of it. So could I call you maybe like a credit union for small farm operations, or is that not a good way to define it?
Well, the financing component of what we do is our unique element compared to a lot of other nonprofits that want to help small food and farm. But it's done in such a way that the individuals who want to support these food businesses make their own decisions on whether they want to loan money, what the terms are. We try to be very helpful and supportive of these businesses after the loan occurs. So we stay in close touch, keep them connected with people, help them with finding buyers for their products. So it's a lot more than a financial institution. And what we do is we try to bridge the gap between, let's say, a crowdfunding or friends and family funding and regular traditional financing. So our goal is to help those businesses become able to qualify for an SBA loan or other traditional financing, and then we certainly step aside. In fact, we don't really help people that can qualify for loans. We want to help that gap area.
Okay. Bob, I'm going to come to you last only because I think most of us are more familiar on a daily basis with with farmers markets than we are with some other topic. So that's the one that's going to kind of come to the top for us in a couple minutes. I want to move on to Eric for a second. There's a lot of people in the within the city of San Luis Obispo and the surrounding area that know what the Natural Foods Co-op is, but there may be a lot of folks that that are not familiar with it, never heard of it, and don't even know what it is. So why don't we try and define that and get a sense of what that is?
Sure, I'd love to. Well, the food co-op was started actually back in the early 1970s by a group of people that wanted to buy food in bulk. And they utilized a company called Mountain People Distributors. And they would have a truck deliver a whole load to a garage. And they would split it up into the families that were participating in that load. And they would get wholesale prices. And it was a cooperative effort, so to speak. And it just grew. More and more people wanted to take advantage of lower prices, wholesale prices, and things like that. And pretty soon, the co-op, Ida wasn't involved back in the 70s, but the co-op morphed into the Cuesta Co-op, was the original name. And they opened a small store on Francis in a house. And it stayed in that house until 2013 from the 70s. And it changed the name from the Cuesta Co-op to the San Luis Obispo Natural Foods Co-op. And it was basically in 2013, going out of business, basically. They had dropped to maybe 300 or 400 members. They were hardly making – well, they weren't making enough money to pay the bills. And they had planned to move to a new location for years and had been paying double rent and everything else. I got involved with it with Jeff and Slow Money. We heard from the founder of Slow Money. I forget, Jeff, what was his name again?
Woody Tash is the founder, yeah. And still chairman.
Still chairman. He presented the whole topic of Slow Money up at Hearst Ranch, sponsored by the Cal Poly Sustainability Network. And we went there, and he talked about what Slow Money was all about, helping food businesses. And a gal that Kathy Longacre, that I've known for years, has been a member, was a member of the co-op for many, many, 30 years. She said, you know, the first kind of Slow Money loan we ought to make is to the co-op so they can actually move into a real store. And the co-op did about 8 families put in between $5,000 and $25,000. He raised about $150,000. Through Slow Money, each person had their own individual loan. It wasn't like a $150,000 loan. It was a bunch of small loans. And we've all been paid off since they moved. But the co-op now is in a real store. It's around 4,500 square feet. They have aisles and they have everything. It's like a real store. You can be a member, and members have benefits because a member is an owner of the store. That's the difference with a co-op. A co-op, you own the store. You're an owner, kind of like Farm Supply or Sazloc. You're an owner, and it's great. And they get different benefits, a little more discounts. They get discount programs. And the neat thing about the co-op recently is that we've passed the $2 million sales threshold, which means that we're able to qualify for the National Co-op Grocers Association, which means we can get better wholesale prices. And be able to offer even lower prices to our customers.
So where are you located now?
Well, we're at 2494 Victoria Street, which is just east of Broad, behind the fire station on Broad Street, kind of behind Rabobank. If you go down that way, you go down Broad Street if you're heading south and turn left onto Kerberil towards the railroad tracks, and you run right into the store.
Okay. So anybody can walk in and shop there?
Anybody can shop. But for $25 a year, you're a member owner, and we're just working on things right now to make it be more like an ownership where you might get a share of the profits at the end of the year. We're working on that right now.
Okay. Now I'll aggravate you real well.
Okay.
Because we're going to put Bob Rose in the discussion, and I guess my first question to you, Bob, is a place like the co-op a direct competitor of farmers markets, and do we need to look at – is that local enough, or do we need to be more local than that?
Well, I'd like for us all to be very local, which farmers markets are. But I don't see them as a direct competitor, because the advantage of a farmers market is you get the opportunity to talk to the farmer. So What do you put on these carrots? How do you fertilize? How do you spray? Are you organic? All those sorts of questions you can ask the farmer, which probably can't do that at the
Okay, so how many farmers markets do we have in San Luis County? And do you you may not have a count for Santa Barbara County, but you might have some idea what's in Santa Barbara County also.
Unfortunately, that I don't know. We North County Farmers Market Association manage four: mm-hmm. Paso, Atascadero, Templeton, and Baywood. I think there's probably 30 some in the county, although
that's Baywood, as in Baywood Park.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So I don't think about that as North County, but that's okay. That at least gives me a reference. So you're spreading out a little bit.
Yeah, we wonder why that happened ourselves often, but the folks there had a market and they were having trouble running it, and so we had an organization, and so they wanted to join our organization and have our manager and all our farmers come there. So that's how we ended up with Baywood, a.k.a. Los Osos, being in the North County Farmers Market Association.
How do farmers – well, what is the defining factor for what is someone who can basically sell goods at a farmer's market?
Okay. At our markets, we have two sorts of vendors, we call them. We call them certified farmers, that is, like myself – I grow olives and make olive oil. I grow sweet corn, walnuts, that sort of thing. I grow all those things on my place or on property that I would rent or own or have some sort of control over. And then we have guests, people like sell tamales or meat. Sometimes the vendor there raises their own beef. Other times they buy it and cut it up into small pieces. Then we have very few crafters at our markets. And then we have processors that like make salsa and things like that. Mm-hmm. Again, all the ingredients in the salsa, they don't necessarily make themselves, so they're not a certified farmer. They are one of our guests.
Mm-hmm. How do you work with your farmers or your guests to make sure the product that they're selling or what they're providing is indeed a local product? Because one of your goals, as we understand, is that the products that basically being handled there, someone didn't go to a wholesaler and buy, five cases of tomatoes with an unknown origin because they didn't have tomatoes this month and decide to bring them to the farmer's market.
Well, we have a manager who keeps track of that, as mm-hmm. do all the other board members. We have mm-hmm. seven board members, and there are some very strict state laws in involving that. You have to have a sign up there saying, we grow what we sell. You have to have a sign saying what county you're in. And if you're in violation of that, there's some very serious fines. And we recently had a farmer at one of our markets who was selling things that he didn't grow. So we asked the county, he happened to be from Santa Barbara County, to investigate that, and they found that they were, in fact, bringing things that they didn't grow. So they fined them, and after the process was complete, took quite a while, they're no longer a member of our association.
Mm-hmm. Within the areas what we're talking about, with a co-op, farmers markets, other ways of supporting local agriculture, We've seen something come up they're actually growing about the last, I would say, 3 to 4 years, maybe even less than that, and that is some larger farm operations and some farmers market type size operations that are doing weekly, kind of a weekly box subscription. There's probably an official name for it that escapes me at the moment.
CSAs.
Okay. And that, translate that.
A CSA. I ran one for 10 years. A CSA is a community-supported agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a subscription-type service where you pay in advance to the farmers to help them out, and then they deliver to you.
And Tally Farms does that, as does Nature's Touch in Templeton, mm-hmm. and you subscribe.
Right.
It's an outlet for farmers to bring their produce. Now, Tally Farms obviously grows much of their own. Nature's Touch in Templeton, they rely on other farmers to provide them with food. And you get a basket of various things. And usually they have to include a recipe or two because what the heck do I do with that?
Like kohlrabi's.
Yeah, what's that? How many different ways can I use this kale?
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that because actually my son actually is a subscriber to one of them. And he said he had never thought about actually eating kale till it showed up in his box for the first time a couple of times and then learning how to use it and what to do with it. So I think there's an educational process.
And that's one of the advantages of a farmer's market. You can ask the farmer, what the heck, what is that and what do I do with that? Like I've recently put shallots on my table. A lot of people know what they are and others, what are those? How do I use those? And it's fun to tell people how to use them.
Mm-hmm. How do you have a farmer's market? If you're a farmer, how do you find the time, if you will, to basically be part of a farmer's market? Because if you're trying to sell most of your product through farmer's markets and local things, and I realize the co-op comes into that, and we'll look at that also. I'm thinking there's not enough time in the day.
There isn't. And many of our farmers are large families. Mm-hmm. And as in any family, some members like to grow the stuff. Some are buying the seedlings and planning how to do things. And others are marketers. The gal that sells next to me in Templeton, she's been coming to the market. Oh, I don't know how old she is. She probably... be offended when I'm going to guess at her age.
Don't go there.
We'll say she's probably 30-something.
Okay.
And she's been coming to that market since she was a little girl. Her parents would bring her. She would play in the park in Templeton. And now she's managing the sales for the family.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let me remind folks, we're having a discussion about food hubs and farmers markets and the food co-op in San Luis Obispo. And my guests are well-versed in this. I have the Bob Rose, who's the president of the North County Farmers Market, and Jeff Wade, who's the founder and director of Slow Money, and Eric Mickelson, who's president of the Slow Natural Foods Co-op, along with being an organic farmer. We'd like you to be part of the discussion also if you want to jump on in here. The phone number is 805-781-3875. That's 781-3875. This is public radio and community radio, KCBX, and we're glad you're listening today, and we'd like you to be part of the discussion if you'd like to do that too. As we look at, there's a big effort. Well, farmers markets have been around for a long time. How long have we had farmers markets in San Luis County? Do either of you?
Yeah,
any of you
late 70s.
Right, the North County Farmers Market Association incorporated, I think, in 1985. Mm-hmm. That's when they started.
Yeah.
The first market was down at Young's Giant Foods in the parking lot down on Broad Street.
Oh, interesting.
In St.
Yeah.
Louis. And,
so that was quite some time ago.
Yeah. And now it's, I think, a Dodge dealer down there.
Yeah.
Cole Dodge.
Yeah. But, so 30 years ago, or maybe 35 years ago, farmers markets really were not that common, I guess. Nobody knew what they were. I mean, the first one, from my experience in San Luis County, was when they closed off Higuera Street to in the cruising, all of a sudden it became a wonderful spot to put stuff together there, and quite a find. It's a great way to buy stuff, and I think for a lot of us, it's a very valuable way to as you say, learn about new things from that standpoint. One of the questions I had to Bob was about how farmers find the time to do the farmer's market and grow their stuff. And so, Eric, you may be able to jump into that
as far as how
people buy things or sell things to you at the co-op.
Right. Well, I real quick hit the farmer's market things. I used to do 6 farmer's markets, and I didn't do them all. I had a couple of my workers out at the farm did a couple of them, but I mean, each farmer's market takes about 5 hours. You got to, pack it up, drive to the market, set it up. You got to be there an hour early, and it's going to take you a half hour afterwards to break down. So you're gone 4, 5, 6 hours out of the day. You can't do it if you're farming a really small farm. If you have a huge family, maybe you can. But I found it was very difficult, so that's why I got involved with the San Luis Obispo Farmers Slow Natural Foods, because I could sell my product wholesale and get a pretty good price from the co-op, to sell it, because normally if you sell wholesale, you're going to get reamed because a lot of middlemen in there. So if you're selling directly to the co-op, it's great. And we have over 85, I think it's 85 local farm food producers that sell at the co-op. And I mean local, that are right here in San Luis Obispo County, from cookie makers to walnut people to people that even make their own wine and port, and broccoli growers, strawberry growers. And we have big pictures up on the ceiling, hanging from the ceiling of our farmers. And we try to change those once in a while. Big life-size photos of those people that are really doing the work. And so we try to have as much local produce as we can. But we do have a relationship with an organic distributor out of the Bay Area that will deliver from California to us to fill the gaps. So when we don't have a farmer that's growing a particular product that we'd like to have, then we'll work with them.
Okay. We'll get back to that in a second. I don't want to keep a caller on hold here too long. So, okay. Megan, are you there? Hello? Okay. I do not hear my caller, so
Megan,
if you can hear us, I am going to put you back on hold until we figure out why I can't get you on the speaker here. So don't go away. Okay. Jeff, you want to go? Why don't you jump in? You were going to put something on that topic.
Well, yes, on a couple of the points. All great background. It's good to hear the history in the area. A couple of things. One is that the Slow City Farm recently started a CSA, just first time this summer. Small, but it's all from the farmers that are there on site at the property off the freeway. So that's great news. The need for both the farmers markets and the CSAs are clear. There needs to be as many avenues as possible for people to access that fresh local food. I did also want to mention that the work we've done being involved with the Food Hub Working Group, which is part of the Slow Food System Coalition, was to look at and analyze some of the challenges and the impediments for farmers getting their food to buyers. And one of the things that we started doing just this year is we involved Harvest Santa Barbara, which is a small distributor of food produce in the Santa Barbara, Ventura, Oxnard area primarily. But they are unique in that every one of the items on their price list is specified by farm, and it's 95% organic. The rest are organic or sustainable practices. And so it's very transparent as far as where it's coming from, and the quality is great, and they've agreed to start working up here. And we've connected them with some buyers as well as some local farms who will benefit by selling through them, not only to local people, but maybe also having some of that brought back down to Santa Barbara.
Okay. Hold on a second. Let's see if we can get Megan back on the phone. So, okay. Megan, are you there? Okay, we still don't have Megan, so okay, I'll put you back on hold and we'll try and get back to you. Please stick around. Let me see. So let me see if we can get – okay, well, let me try the second line here just for a second. Okay, Seamus, are you there? Okay, not there at all. Okay, so we're going to put you on hold and we'll get back to that. This day. Okay, there we go. Okay. There we go. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so who am I? Who do I have on the line with me now? Hello. Okay, I'm going to put you back on hold because you're there, but you can't hear me at this moment. So we'll get back to it in a second. Sorry about that, folks. It's live public radio. I want to back up to the concept of. Why did it take so long, I guess, to have farmers markets? I would have thought in my mind that in the 50s and the mid-60s, we would have seen a lot more close-to-home availability of products. I mean, we didn't have every place being just a big supermarket on every corner. We're dealing more with large markets and things like that now than we were, probably even 30 or 40 years ago. So How did the farmers market movement come out of something in particular? Because somebody didn't have to invent it, obviously. The ability to have a produce truck show up in your neighborhood with things that were available to you seems like it's been around before our lifetimes.
When I was a kid, in some of the places that I have lived, there were farmers that came around with their horse-drawn wagons and later pickups that had the seasonal produce on this. So I think the farmers got together and said, okay, let's all agree to meet in Joe's parking lot on Tuesdays, and we'll meet our people there, and kind of grew from that.
Yeah, I think California passed a law to develop certified farmers markets, which created some kind of organization to them that the farmers had to certify that they actually grew the product. And the counties, each county is charged with verifying that the farmer is actually growing it. And every year I have a representative from the county's agriculture department come out to the farm, and they'll look at the farm and determine that I'm growing everything that I say I'm going to sell. And I fill out a form and the whole thing. And Bob knows. He sees them. And he probably fills it out too.
Right. And you... You pay money for that privilege.
So, yeah, we do.
Of having the fellow come out there or the lady come out and inspect to make sure that I do have, 500 feet of sweet corn. And
yeah. There always seems to be a fee in there somehow.
There always seems to be a fee in there. Yeah.
Well, there's very little for free anymore. Yeah. We can understand that. Now, I know of people who also I don't know if they're still doing this. I won't mention the name of the farm necessarily, but a farm down in Arroyo Grande that I believe used to go all the way to Santa Monica every week. And
still
that
they were
okay.
So. One of our farmers in the North County Farmers Markets does, in fact. He's from Atascadero, mm-hmm. and he goes down to Santa Monica. The prices are, I've talked to one of them that they sell their blueberries for $7 a basket down there, and where they're $2 and $3
here. My goodness, yeah. Yeah, that's surprising. Yeah. Well, we think we've got the phone lines back up and running here, so let me see what we've got. Let me go. Okay. Megan, are you with us?
I am.
Yay! Hello. Thank you.
All right. Okay, Megan's with us.
Technology sometimes baffles even those of us who do it all the time. Anyway, we jump on into the discussion here.
Thank you so much for this conversation. I am a member of the Tally subscription box, and I know you guys mentioned before there's kind of that joy in you get something and you're not sure what to do with it, and you get to ask the farmer. And I find it to be such a way to reconnect with food, to go, I wouldn't have pick this, and Tally includes a recipe, or you just look online and you figure out what to do with what you've got. And it's a way to just remember that food is not magic. All food we get, even at big supermarkets, even when it's sprayed with wax and it looks beautiful, is from people pulling it out of the ground. And I just love the conversation about local food, because it reminds us we need to be making choices about our food. And I'm a co-op shopper as well, not yet a member, but I just really appreciate that there are so many options in this area for getting real food from the people who are growing it. I went out and did a tour at Tally Farms, and it just makes such a difference to see the people who are putting food on our plates, really. So I just wanted to thank you for this great conversation.
Yeah. Megan, this is Fred. Let me jump in with a question. What started your interest in this in the start, and how did you find out about it? Because for a long time, I think nobody really realized until one day everybody could get a box.
You know what's so funny? I was at the local farmer's market for me. I live in Grover, and we have a lot of small markets, and I was at the Saturday Arroyo Grande farmer's market, and a woman there was doing price comparison. And she was with her husband, and they had this kind of checklist. And they were going, oh, if you get this much for this and this much for that. And I was curious. I said, what are you doing? She said, well, we get a farm subscription box, and we're trying to figure out, kind of pound for pound, is it a good deal? And there's no answer to that question, because it depends on what you're cooking and what you want, and it's a different experience, and I do both. Even with the farm subscription box, I do both. But she gave me the info for it, and it just sounded intriguing. And my previous experience with CSAs had been just in the greater Chicago area. There are farms that you get about an hour and a half outside the city. And the CSAs there are, you have to buy in at the beginning of the year, and it's several hundred dollars. You never know what you're going to get. And I was amazed at how far we've come. With Tally, you get online. If you don't want a box that week, you're out of town, whatever it is, you click a button, they tell you what's going to be there every week, and then you can decide. So for me, this felt like a concept I had heard about before that was a nice idea, and now it was totally practical.
Yeah, great. Thanks for the call, Ernie.
Thank you so much.
Okay, Eric, you had a comment about that?
I do. With the new farmers market, or CSAs like Tally, they're much larger farms than the original CSAs. And the CSAs were really set up to really support the farm. So when you got an annual subscription that you paid up front, you help that small farmer to be able to buy the seed and buy the equipment to really grow the thing. And right now I've talked to some smaller farmers that are doing CSAs still. They can't compete with the Tally type group anymore because they can't do a on this week, off that week. You know, they can't, they're growing and they need to get the produce out every week, and they need the income from that. And what's happened to the CSAs have morphed into a real commercial type venture now, and it's a lot different than the old CSAs where you're really supporting the smaller farms. Tally's a huge farm, and they're doing a great job with what they're doing, but it is a different concept than we originally started with the CSAs when I did mine in 2002.
Yeah. My thought is, and you may be very correct with that, I don't want to turn this into a debate, and that's not where I'm going with it. But I think maybe to some extent what you get though is a some mutual benefit in that people who've maybe had never heard about it before.
Sure.
My son ended up signing up for it because somebody where he worked said, gee, they bring a whole bunch of boxes to his place of employment every week, and they do it as a drop-off point. So I think there's some pros and cons with that.
One of the advantage of a farmer's market is these days it's becoming a social event. The Thursday night market is the absolute classic case, but the Templeton one also, people come and they just love to talk to one another and say, hi, Mary, how you doing? And they've got the little shopping list and they go around and they, in many cases, they've established relationships with the farmers.
Yeah. I will confess, I have a friend I live in Atascadero. I have a friend in North County, and if I can't track them down, I generally can go to the Templeton Farmers Market and know I'll find them there because they'll show up there every week too. Let me go ahead and get in here because people have been waiting on hold for a long time. Seamus, are you there?
Hi. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry to keep you waiting, and sorry we messed up the phones here. So just jump on in the discussion.
Hi. Yeah. No. So I just wanted to thank you guys for having this discussion as well. My question. Is to the, I guess, the farmer's market issue. I am with my friend right now. We work on a farm in Morro Bay, and we have been considering new ways to expand the business. And we've felt a little discouraged by the farmer's market scene because of farmers that are already there, who have established businesses there. And we're kind of wondering, how can you prevent the sort of monopoly that comes along with of farmers who've been there forever, or fruits that, you know, only one is needed at the farmer's market. So, yeah, if you guys could speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And actually, Bob, before you answer, let me jump into that too. I think the key question is there room for new people, and do you allow for expansion whenever you can?
Yes, there's room for new people, and we do allow for expansion. Now, everyone wants to come to the Templeton Market. The Templeton Market is closed because we have these people that have been there for a very long time. But we have smaller markets in Atascadero and Paso Robles that do have room. Now, unfortunately, some of the people who want to come to the market, they want to bring strawberries. Well, gee whiz, we've got 5 or 6 strawberry vendors already. They want to bring tomatoes and zucchini in the middle of July and August. Gee whiz, we already have people who are doing that. When I started, I just started in the Atascadero market, okay? And it took me 3 years before there was a space in the Templeton market that I could manage. And so now I do both of those markets.
Right. Yeah, I had the same experience because our original farm was Clark Valley in Los Osos.
Yeah.
And we wanted to be in the Baywood market. We could not get in it. The old manager said, we're not taking any more farmers. Sorry about that. So we went to the Morro Bay downtown market. We went to Atascadero. But our customers, people that knew us, kept putting the pressure on the North County Farmers Market until they said, hey, you got to let Clark Valley Farm into this. Mm-hmm. And now I don't sell there anymore, but my farm manager, Jim Tarek, does sell at with Los Osos Valley right now.
Right, he sells in Bayway.
Yeah, you know, it's, well, actually, Jeff, I'll let you jump on in here, too, because the discussion, to some extent, we're talking about a supply and demand issue, and I guess we have to allow the free market. I would assume we have to allow the free market to work things out with that. How does that fit into the funding and the success of given operations?
Well, I think we do need, as a community, to speak out and demand local product. When you go to your restaurant that you like, you know, see what they say on the menu about the ingredients, ask them what's local and fresh and included in the product. You know, that consumer demand can create a lot of pull and need. And, you know, it's one of the reasons the prices are higher in Santa Monica and people are driving down there. You know, the interesting fact is that the L.A. region considers our county local because their ability to satisfy all the need for their population is outstretched by what they can grow there. So your definition of local expands not only as a result of, hey, I can't get that product locally, we can't grow it here, but also there isn't enough of it here. We have to go outside the area to get it. So I would like to see us keep more of that product here, have the demand be higher, have the prices be more equitable, and consumers can help that in great ways, whether it's a farmer's market example, as Eric points out, hey, get my favorite farm into the market, or if it's just going into your grocer or your restaurant and saying, hey, I'd like to know what's fresh and local.
Yeah. We'll jump into this a little more. We've had people waiting on hold for a while. So, okay, Steve, are you still there?
Yes.
Okay, sorry to keep you waiting so long. Jump on in the discussion.
Well, you're on the air. I'm grateful to hear all that has been spoken so far today. I was one of the original founders of what became Cuesta and then San Luis Obispo store back in the late, well, actually early 70s. But more importantly, my history with this movement, and I would call it a movement because it took a movement to make it happen. And I would credit people like J.I. Rodell, who promoted organics. I mean, we're talking about doing a whole different kind of farming. And I have a degree from Cal Poly in ag business management. Started in 63, graduated in 68. And at that time, that institution knew nothing, nor did they want to know anything about organics, including compost. They had no idea what it was. They knew the parts that it made up, but they wouldn't put it together. And now they sell it. So there's been a revolution in farming. It hasn't taken hold wholesale across the country. But part of that idea is to eat locally and eat fresh. When I was in school, even then, about 1% of the population was feeding the other 99%. And you know how they were doing it. We have a movement of small farmers who are now really chomping at the bit for marketing opportunities. And back in the day when Williams Brothers was in town, we had local grocery stores. And we call them local grocery stores today, but just try to get organic food that's locally grown into those grocery stores. I would hope that we could, and I hope that we would have more markets. You know, I met Eric at the San Luis market, and years later, campaigned for his hopes and aspirations to be
San
Luis
Obispo supervisor. So anyway, eating fresh, eating local, have them back to back. You know, the market goes in San Luis Obispo down to Arroyo Grande. Well, and then after that, it closes up. Why not have two in both locations if we've got such demand? And, you know, geography kind of works against us. We can't be going too far with it.
Okay. Let me go ahead and let my guests talk about that concept of some more farmers markets. Steve, thanks for the call.
Thanks for that long-winded
No, that's great.
On my part.
Okay.
Appreciate
Thank you very much for the call. Okay. Eric, you wanted to jump in that a little bit?
Oh, gosh. I don't know where to start, but yeah, thank you, Steve. Appreciate your support during the election, but yeah, I'm really you know, fascinated by the Slo Food Co-op. I've been so excited about it. I got involved and helped them move over to the new store, and we need more local farmers, and we're trying to get more and more in there. A lot of the farmers are selling at the farmers markets and really don't have enough product left anymore. I mean, a lot of the smaller ones, but we're still looking for farmers. So if there's a farmer out there listening to this show, give the San Luis Obispo Natural Foods Co-op a call at 544-7928. And our produce buyer would love to talk to you. We need more local stuff, especially things like fruit. Fruit is more difficult. Even the farmers markets have a lot of the farmers from the valley that come over and sell fruit because not that many people are growing it here, you know, and it's difficult.
They have the problem like you did. You lost all your fruit this spring, right, off your trees.
I had the best crop of apricots and peaches I'd ever seen the last 2 years. But 2 years in a row, late April frost took care of that crop. And I'm just trying to figure out, I'm going to have to buy wind machines or something, but or put them in the small greenhouses.
I don't mean this as a sarcastic question. Yeah. That's not how I'm saying it. My thought is there any way to save some of those apricots and dry them, or you just have to give up on
them? No, when they freeze, they turn into little almonds.
Oh.
They just shrivel up, and they're
sorry.
They're about the biggest.
Because my favorite apricots are dried apricots.
Like ping pong balls, you know, and I spent a whole day thinning trees, and then the next day it frosts.
Okay. That's one of our processors or guests at our market has dried apricots.
Yeah. I know they do.
My favorite food.
Yeah. Actually, one of the things that got me moving towards looking at farmers markets as a source more than anything else was the fact that that my wife educated me that most of the tomatoes I could get in the commercial supermarkets just didn't have the taste of tomatoes that had actually been allowed to ripen on the vine.
But they're good if you want to play baseball or something.
Yeah, they render down to some good some good sauce and some good puree, but they don't go much further than that sometimes. So that kind of moved me towards going to the farmers markets. But I have to throw this in here, and I'll try not to make it too difficult on you, Bob. But the farmers market in Atascadero used to be at the Sunken Gardens Park. It used to be at a park. Okay, it used to be at a place where people could go and you could go to the farmers market and also hang out at the park. And then it got moved to a supermarket parking lot. I have to confess, it is difficult for me to have the concept of I'm going to go to a supermarket in their paved parking lot to go to the farmers market. It just doesn't have the feel of community it used to have.
Well, the Atascadero farmers market started out in the Riley's parking lot, and then it moved.
That predates me. Okay.
Okay. And then it moved to the Rite Aid parking lot, which is now where the Rite Aid store is now. Yeah. But when they did all those changes, then we had to move, and our business dropped by well over half, okay?
So when you moved to the Sunken Gardens Park, people stopped attending as often.
Oh, absolutely.
I went more often when it was at the park. So.
Yeah, one of the reasons they didn't go there is because there wasn't any parking, and there still isn't. Mm. The city administration has told us the parking situation will improve, but every time you move a market, volume drops by half, and it takes perhaps 3 years to get it back. So, and there's another disadvantage to the Sunken Gardens. It's a, there are activities out there that people don't want to watch for. You know, the kids hang out there. It's not against the law for two kids to be making out, but I really don't want to watch it. It's just what kids do, and I guess they hang out there, and so we're much happier in the Smart and Final parking lot.
Okay. All right.
Plenty of parking.
There's plenty of parking. I understand that. It's just I go for the tomatoes, and that's what gets me there as often as I can possibly be there. Jeff, let me have you jump back in the discussion. Can you give me some more information about your food hub working group and what it's doing to build more of this understanding?
Yes. Well, we were one of a number of groups formed and supported by CFP grant funding through the Food System Coalition, and we're just wrapping up our work this month. The intention was originally, okay, how do we former food hub here locally, and which was a good way to get started, but it wasn't necessary. It almost determined the answer before we did the background work on it. And so there's been a number of good survey work by Central Coast Grown and the Food Hub Working Group over the last couple of years. And the reality is that a lot of the things that a physical food hub facility would do aren't necessarily required by a large number of farmers. And, you know, there's been a lot of surveys. There's over 300 of them across the United States. But the surveys have shown that it's challenging for them to be very profitable. They can be nonprofit, cooperatively owned as well, but still it's a bit of a struggle. It's like any business. So you want to make sure you've got the foundational needs before you dive down that path. You can also create a virtual food hub, an online food hub, which is very common these days, and there's tools out there to do that. But you've got to have the interaction between the buyers, the sellers, the persistency of involvement, keeping the information accurate, up to date, and are you going to enable e-commerce through that hub? That's a whole other element. So some of the stuff that we've done is to look at the other challenges that maybe can be addressed in different ways. So, for example, just what we call matchmaking between the farmers, the producers, and the buyers. And we've had a little bit of success with that. Sometimes it's just a matter of the farmer doesn't have time to go to the farmer's market. Well, doesn't have time to go out and market and sell his product or get creative about how to sell it, figure out who to talk to, and then, okay, can you deliver every week on Tuesday morning? Well, yeah, sometimes. And so there's some demands on the part of the buyer. There's some requirements by the producer. There's a gap in that middle, and one by one, as we try to connect people, we try to help, you know, figure out ways to close those gaps.
Yeah. If I'm a buyer, as an end user consumer buyer, I can say, I can't get the lettuce I want today. The strawberries didn't look that good to me at this particular farmer's market, so I'll just not have strawberries this week. When you're dealing with a commercial end user, you're dealing with restaurants and other type of food service caterers. If I'm a caterer and I want to buy local, I've got to worry about whether or not I am going to get all of the zucchini I'm going to need, and I'm going to get it not just today because it's a good day for zucchini, but I'm going to get it next week also. Mm-hmm. So what work are you doing with restaurants and things like that to try and build this whole process?
Well, we did look at a number of restaurants, surveyed them to find out how they were buying local, what they were buying local, and oddly, it seemed like there was quite a bit of local purchasing, but they don't seem to be promoting it at the restaurant as a marketing differentiator, which is curious to me. I'd love to talk to restaurateurs about that further, but in some cases, they'll go to the farmers markets, get what they need if it's local and convenient and the schedule is right. You know, a lot of the chefs will buy weekly at certain markets. Some of them will actually pre-order bulk amounts of product from particular farmers, and they'll go to the market and pick them up there. And so that's, you know, acting really as a hub as well as a consumer farmers market. So there is some benefit to the commercial entities in that sense. But one of the other things the Food Hub Working Group did do is another way to help the small farmer is to get them into institutional buyers, which they really have trouble and don't even attempt to get into. And so we've done some recent work here getting smaller farmers into the Cal Poly food system and also into the Paso Robles School District. And so we hope to see more of that farm-to-school connections happening as well as the restaurants.
You also have hospitals, nursing home care facilities and things like
prisons.
That hopefully would like to see that too.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think it takes a large operation to try and get food service to someplace like Cal Poly or to
and
one of the
And that's
prisons.
Where a group like Harvest Santa Barbara comes in. They're very small farmer oriented. Mm-hmm. They'll work with a small farmer that has challenges where all the other distributors, you know, really can't handle them. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons we suggested they come in and start working the area.
Okay. We only have a few minutes left. I want to have everybody get a chance to get kind of their opportunity to let us know where things are going in their direction. Bob, why don't we start with you? Talk to us about the farmers markets and what we'd like to see in a few years or right now with the growth in that area.
One of the big changes that, we have made is we at the North County Farmers Markets were one of the early ones to start taking in food stamps. Now, they don't call them food stamps anymore. It's called CalFresh. Years ago, when there were actual pieces of paper, food stamps, they were redeemable at Farmers Market. But then they switched to the Electronic Benefits Transfer System, a.k.a. EBT. Then Farmers Market were left out of that. Well, now, since October 2013, we have been accepting Electronic Benefits Transfer, EBT, CalFresh, at our Farmers Markets. And recently, we applied for and received a grant to offer matching, recognizing that the people who are on CalFresh have economic challenges, and perhaps they feel they're not getting the greatest deals by going to the farmer's market. So what we provide now is we'll match up to their first $10. We'll give them another $10 that can be only used for fruits and vegetables. And we're looking to even expand that beyond $10 to perhaps $15 or some other number, as long as we can keep within our
grant parameters. I had not heard about that before. That sounds like a wonderful program, a way to really build some economic viability for those individuals and also increase your customer base. That's
right. That's providing good, healthy food for those who are economically challenged.
Yeah. Eric. Mm. What's your observation about where we're going and what we need to continue to look at to make sure that the local farmers' operations and local produce supplies for all of us gets better?
Well, from the perspective of the San Luis Natural Foods Co-op, we've seen a lot of large regional and national retailers come into town. You have brand new Lassen's Foods. You have Whole Foods, you have Trader Joe's. All these stores do not really support local farmers. The Slo Natural Foods Co-op is one of the only ones. It's the only locally owned store in San Luis Obispo. And we hope to expand into Paso Robles, working with the Paso Robles Co-op people soon. That's a long-term plan, but we hope to do that. But our store is a beautiful store that we've had there now since 2013, but it's too small. We can't compete and offer the services and the products that these larger stores like Lassen's and these other stores that just come into town are offering to consumers and to our members. So we're looking at opportunities to move to a larger store where we can provide more, processed food, but food ready to go, salads, a cafe, a juice bar, a coffee bar, different things like that, and actually have... We have fresh fish fishermen that bring their fish into the store, but it has to be frozen because we don't have a fresh food counter. And so we're going to start adding fresh fish and meats and things like that, but we need a larger store to do that. So we want to get back to our members to see what they think. Do they think we need to have these type of products in the store to expand what we offer to the members and to the community? So, we're going to start looking at feedback, trying to get feedback from members and from people in the community. How big do we need to get? We don't want to be a Whole Foods, but we want to be able to offer some of those products that that people want.
Yeah, very good points. Jeff, you get the real last word.
Okay, thank you, Fred. Well, I would just love to continue the conversation with anybody out there that would like to discuss this further. I'll give you a couple of opportunities. You can certainly contact me directly. My contact info is jeff@slowmoneyslo.org, and that's slowmoneyslo.org. That's also the website. You can Google Slow Money San Luis Obispo. You'll find it. More immediately, we have a meeting. Our seasonal gathering is this coming Tuesday night, August 2nd. We hold that over at the Slo Guild Hall, formerly Slo Grange on Broad Street, 6 p.m. August 2nd. We have a number of food businesses speaking. There's food to sample, bring something to share, bring a friend, and come as a potential supporter, volunteer, potential maybe investor in a small field business. And we cover all of those kinds of topics at these meetings. And then just something quickly for farmers and people who know farmers, on September 22nd, August 22nd, there'll be another event at the Guildhall, which is specifically intended to matchmake between farmers and buyers. And we're going to be inviting a lot of people to come to that. The Young Farmers Guild is actually the sponsor of that meeting, and it should be a very interesting affair. So go to our website, and you can find out more, slowmoneyslo.org.
Okay.
Thank you.
So you can Google, if you didn't catch all of that, if you Google Slow Money SLO, you'll find it, and that's amazing what we can still find with Google. Sometimes too much. I thank you all. I think this has been a wonderful discussion today. I think we all love to eat and love to eat well when we can, and work with our local folks as much as we can. I think having more opportunities for that is a great way to get people out and, in my opinion, away from their computer or their television set. But I'll leave that editorial comment alone now, I guess. I probably said too much. I thank you all for coming. This has been Central Coast Voices, and I appreciate everybody being part of this discussion today. Central Coast Voices is a project of Action for Healthy Communities, and Action for Healthy Communities does a report that will give you a picture on what's going on in San Luis Obispo County. You can find that at actionslo.org. It's published every 3 years, and the newest report will be coming out in December of 2016. It's available online, it's free, and you can either download the entire report or just look and see what's available there. Next week, Chris Kington Barker will be with you. Her schedule is not all finalized yet for next week, but it'll be a lively program, as Chris always proves to have, and hope you can join Central Coast Voices again there. As I mentioned, we're a project of Action for Healthy Communities, which is a sub-project of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County. And we do this program in collaboration, of course, with KCBX, and thank their support. The program is also underwritten by a grant from Joan Gellert Sargent. We appreciate her ongoing support. Without her, there would be no program either. You can reach us at voices@kcbx.org or 543-2323 if you want to contribute feedback or suggestions for the program. Thanks to Bob Rose, Jeff Wade, and Eric Mickelson for being my guests today. Next up is This American Life with my favorite host, Ira Glass. This has been Central Coast Voices. Thank you for joining us today.